Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to The Corridor. I'm your host, Jesse Bell. We begin our program today with a story from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, and it covers Kingston's kickoff for its most ambitious Give 30 campaign yet.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Kingston kicks off Give 30 with their most ambitious goal yet. Monday was officially the beginning of Give 30 2024, and Kingston is aiming to surpass last year's record high. Give 30 is a grassroots, volunteer-run initiative to bring attention to hunger in our communities and encourage people of all backgrounds to support food banks during the month of Ramadan. The initiative now supports 17 major food banks and anti-poverty organizations across Canada, and one in the USA, which together serve hundreds of thousands of people. Kingston's campaign supports the Partners in Mission Food Bank. In 2023, a record 1 in 19 people received a food hamper from Partners in Mission. Last year, Kingston's chapter of Give 30 smashed their previous record of $16,000, raising around $25,000 through the campaign. This year, they're determined to keep the momentum going and surpass last year's $25,000. While Ramadan extends from March 11th to April 9th, the campaign launched on March 4th and will be running until June 10th. I sat down with Mona Rahman with Kingston's Give 30 team to talk about this year's campaign.
For those who aren't familiar, or just need a refresh, what is Give 30?
So Give 30 is a campaign that was started in 2012. And it really came out, I think the person who founded it, Ziad Mia, he was putting his coffee mug away for the month of Ramadan because we were going to be fasting that month. And somebody made a joke that's like, oh, you must save a lot of money during Ramadan. And that actually got him thinking that, yeah, I do save money. I'm not getting coffee. I'm not buying lunch. It's like, what if we do something with this money that we're saving? And of course, part of Ramadan, I mean, Ramadan is a month where it's a month of self-discipline, of doing things that would bring you closer to God. So we increase our worship, we increase our charity, we increase our prayers and reading Quran and things like that. So, and one of the side effects of fasting during the day is that you feel hunger and hopefully that will allow us to empathize with those that are dealing with hunger and thirst on a regular basis, not just for, you know, we get to eat at sunset, they may not have the means of doing that. So this was a really good way to tie in, you know, let's translate what we're feeling and then the spirit of Ramadan and the generosity and help those who are within our community by helping the food bank. And there is a tradition, there is a saying in our tradition where the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, advised us that none of you truly believes if you go to bed with your stomach satiated while your neighbor goes hungry. And for us, a neighbor is 40 houses in every direction. So it really is, we should really be taking care of each other as a community and making sure that those around us, you know, we just don't think about ourselves, but think about those that are in need within our own community. And this is a way of doing that. So the campaign actually starts the week before Ramadan, and we've been extending it past Ramadan, sort of around the second Eid, the second holiday that we have. So we're going from March 11th to June 10th this year. And it really is, it's a way of partnering with your local food bank and helping support the food bank. Because what I the food bank has been just the pressure on the our food bank has been increasing, and you know we saw a really big need during COVID as people are losing their jobs, but also with the rising costs of food, which has been a real struggle this year. I think he's quoted as saying that 1 in 19 people received a food hamper last year from them. And that's like, you know, Partners in Mission Food Bank runs on donations from the community, right? There's no government funding, there's no agency funding. So it is a way that we can really help each other, and especially those in our community that are hungry.
Absolutely. And despite all the challenges our community is going through, last year, Kingston set a new record, beating the previous record by almost 10K. Such an impressive year. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to that, and also if there are any goals this year, or if we're just aiming to keep up the good work.
Well, I think we were all taken aback by how much we were able to raise last year. I mean, it's like almost 25,000. And that is, like, honestly, it is through the generosity of our community members. We don't do any real active drives. It's just spreading the word. It's mainly an online fundraiser. We do encourage schools. So we did have some schools do food drives towards Give 30. The Islamic school did a food drive as well. So it's just that raising of awareness during this campaign and any other campaign that the Partners in Mission does. But yeah, it was, we were actually blown away. And so because we reached, you know, pretty much 25,000. Of course, the goal this year is going to be 25,000 so that we can see if we can break that as well. So, you know, if we were able to do it last year, let's, you know, encourage our friends. If you donated, donate again, and encourage your friends, your neighbors, and your coworkers. He's like, oh, join me in doing that. So if we keep doing that each year and keep increasing, it really is a benefit to the entire community. And I know that year after year, we hear that, okay, we're okay now, but they're in terms of forecasting for, you know, the winter, it is always a struggle for the food bank. So, I mean, it's not that, hopefully we get to a point where we don't need it. And I think I spoke to some of the people that actually were involved in the initialization of our food bank and the mission. And the goal was always to sort of get over a hump and get to a point where it's not needed anymore. Unfortunately, we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, hopefully this year we can keep up that momentum from last year and reach our goals. How can folks contribute this year?
So it's really easy. Like I said, it's an online fundraiser. You just go to give30.ca/donate, and you find, so this is across Canada, and there's actually one community in the States as well that is participating. So all you do is you go to give30.ca/donate, find the local food bank. So if you're from Kingston, it's Partners in Mission Food Bank. If you're from another community, you know, there's many communities that are participating, and you can just, you'll be taking to the Partners in Mission Food Bank page. You pick the Give 30 campaign and just donate. I mean, it's really, really easy. If there is an organization that or a school that wants to do a fundraiser, maybe a food drive, just let us know. I have this year, we've set up a sign up sheet. It's tinyurl.com/give30ygk. And if you just let us know what you're doing, we'll help publicize through our social media channels, and just to get people just aware of what's or how they can contribute, whether it's by money or I know in the past we've had a business that has you know, donated proceeds of their sales. I mean, that's something, that's an idea that restaurants might want to do, maybe, and, you know, pick a week in Ramadan, pick all of Ramadan, or just pick a day where you say, I'm going to donate a percentage of sales from this day to the food bank. In bigger communities, I know that restaurants had hosted an iftar, which is the meal to break your fast. So they actually had hosted a public iftar, and proceeds of that went to the Give 30 campaign in their community. So that was, I think it was Winnipeg that did that. So there's a lot of different ways, and I would encourage people to be creative in how they want to raise awareness and join the campaign and raise funds. And I will say that, you know, food drives are amazing. We do want people to realize that our community is diverse. And when if you are thinking of contributing food, maybe think about what you yourself serve at your table and donate that, because our community is diverse. And so the people that use the food bank are also diverse. Not everybody, I love pasta, but not everybody eats pasta. It's not a staple for all cultures. So, you know, that's the easiest thing is like whatever you would serve, maybe think about donating that. But yeah, I would say be creative and see, I mean, there could be fun ways of just raising money to help each other.
As Mona stated, for more information and to contribute to this year's campaign, you can head to give30.ca. Schools, community groups, businesses, and individuals who'd like to join the campaign this year and host their own initiative can let the team know at tinyurl.com/give30ygk.
We now move to a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forrestel, about KFL&A Public Health's strong opposition to the potential closure of a Public Health Ontario lab in the city of Kingston. The Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington Board of Health passed a motion at its meeting on Wednesday, February 28, 2024, to, quote, strongly oppose the closure of the local Public Health Ontario lab in Kingston. Dr. Peter Oglaza, the Medical Officer of Health for KFL&A Public Health, noted that the recommendations made in the Office of the Auditor General's Audit on Public Health Ontario would have a negative impact on Kingston's healthcare infrastructure. The audit, released in December 2023, recommended that regional laboratories should be streamlined and that private well water testing across the province should be discontinued. To streamline in this case means effectively to close, Oglaza stated. Oglaza made it clear that the public should understand that KFL&A Public Health is a separate entity from the lab in question. The latter is run by Public Health Ontario, or PHO. But he stressed that the laboratory is, quote, a critical component of Kingston's health infrastructure. The lab is essential in providing timely diagnostic and surveillance services that are, quote, necessary for safeguarding public health. Oglaza added that, to his knowledge, neither public health agencies nor rural residents who rely on well water testing had been consulted about or informed of the profound negative impacts of these changes. Oglaza stressed the importance of the PHO lab in Kingston. Having access to fast and reliable diagnostic information is integral to shaping the KFL&A public health response to healthcare issues in the city. Oglaza stated that the closure of the lab would, quote, impact the local access to timely diagnostic services and therefore impact the timeliness of decisions in both healthcare and public health. Oglaza pointed to the lab's role in shaping Kingston's response to the COVID-19 pandemic as a concrete example of its value to the community. In addition to the loss of these diagnostic services, the closure of the lab would also have a significant impact on research capabilities in the region. The PHO lab works with a number of regional health units, including ones in Prince Edward County and Hastings County. There are also research agreements in place with post-secondary institutions and hospital systems. As Oglaza noted, the PHO lab serves over 570,000 residents. Oglaza and the board discussed how the lab's closure would also have financial ramifications for public health and put a greater strain on the testing capabilities for local hospitals. In regards to the former, public health would have to, quote, pick up the costs of sending local samples out of the city to be tested. Dr. Hugh Guan, Associate Medical Officer of Health for KFL&A Public Health, added that the hospital system, quote, doesn't have the infrastructure introduced for diseases that impact the area, like syphilis. Thus, he said, losing that lab would essentially mean syphilis screening turnaround times would get longer. Of interest to rural residents, Guan also pointed out that the local lab is a big center for well water testing, and that he can't see hospitals conducting private well water tests. After a brief period of further discussion, the Board of Health passed a motion to strongly oppose the closure of the local Public Health Ontario laboratory in Kingston and send correspondence stating such to relevant parties in both Public Health Ontario and the provincial government. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forrestel of The Kingstonist for that story. Coming up next is LJI reporter for CJAI Amherst Island, Ted Evans, with a story on the new Seniors Active Living Center coming to Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township and the Seniors Association Kingston Region have announced a partnership to develop a Seniors Active Living Center in the township this spring. The Township and the Seniors Association are looking to offer programs for aging residents that promote health and well-being, as well as social connections. Executive Director of the Seniors Association, Don Amos, notes it will be their third Seniors Active Living Center and describes how the partnership came to be.
We have two designations right now, Seniors Active Living Centers, and there's a number of them within the province. And the province put another call out for an increase. I think it was 14. They're increasing the total number of seniors active living centers by 14. Right now there's around 302. And so with that, applications were being accepted. So we reached out to the Loyalist Township staff, had lots of conversations with them about what are your thoughts of us presenting some programs in Loyalist Township that would benefit your older adult population. Our model is driven in such that we like to present our program platforms right in communities. That way people can enjoy it. They don't have to travel as much, and it's kind of right in their backyard. Loyalist Township staff thought that was great. We worked a lot on the application to the province, consulting back and forth with the Loyalist Township team. And to our pleasant surprise, we found out that we were our application was approved, which is a third Seniors Active Living Center for us under our mandate. But the application is 100% for Loyalist Township. So we're going to be presenting programs or a program platform right now in Wilton, Odessa, Amherst View, and Bath. So those are the pilot sites that we're going to run for May and June. Then we're going to evaluate, see how everyone likes it, see what types of programs people like. Then we'll rejig and then come back to the community and start again in September and present that another platform or same platform and run straight through to the end of June next year. And that'll be ongoing now, forever funding that we've got. So it'll be lots of opportunity for Loyalist Township residents to give us input on what type of programs they would like to see. Lots of opportunity to enjoy some programs right in their community, in their backyard. And then we can learn what they like, learn what they don't like, and then do that community development with the township staff and with Loyalist residents and present some pretty neat programs for people to enjoy.
Amos went on to mention the importance of the social aspect and how they connect with medical and emergency services.
We find that a lot of doctors are seeing more and more retirees come into their facility. Some of them are recent retirees and others a little bit longer. And oftentimes as retirement kicks in, people have a bucket list, and they go through that bucket list very quickly because they have more time in their hands. And then slowly, sometimes, not always, but sometimes the couch becomes their friend or their backyard becomes their friend, and they lose that social aspect. And that's the dangerous health component. When you lose that social component, there are major health indicators out there that really is detrimental to people when your social aspects start to go down. And that's what we're about, is our main focus is just providing social opportunities for people to come together. And that's why doctors will sometimes refer directly to us saying, hey, this individual is having a tough time. Can I send them over and you can have a chat with them, and maybe there's some programs they could enjoy. And so we see a little bit of that too. So we're excited about the Loyalist Family Health Team potentially setting up an opportunity with us.
Amos described the strong connection between Loyalist Township and Kingston.
It's a little bit of a natural hub for people, and that's why we reached out to Loyalist Township staff saying, hey, we know some of your residents do come into our Kingston facility to take some of our programs, but wouldn't it be neat if we could deliver some programs for your residents right in their own backyard? And they thought that was a great idea. So we're now in the process of reaching out to various community leaders to get some facilities online, and then where we can present programs right in those facilities. And so we're negotiating contracts and getting everything set up for end of April, beginning of May startup.
Amos noted the Seniors Association's excitement for the partnership.
It'll be a great partnership. We've been talking with township staff all the way through this, specifically the recreation team, but we know council's endorsed this proposal as well. So we're excited about this partnership. I think it's going to be a strong one and one for many years to come.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you, Ted, from CJAI-FM for that story. Next, we have CJPE's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Craig Foster, with a story covering the success of three Prince Edward County arm wrestlers.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca. Prince Edward County has honored three Picton residents with civic awards after their recent achievements in arm wrestling, another benchmark in an unusual domination of the sport in this tiny community. During Tuesday's council meeting, Mayor Steve Ferguson granted civic awards to Mike McKinley, Jack McAlpine, and Troy Eaton. All three competitors won awards at the 2023 Canadian Arm Wrestling Championships in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. Eaton won two gold medals and a bronze, McKinley won two gold medals, and McAlpine won two gold and two silver medals. All three are members of a Picton arm wrestling club that boasts an incredible number of champions for such a small region. Eaton is a member of the Canadian Arm Wrestling Hall of Fame and isn't even the top man in his own club. That would be arm wrestling legend Devin Larratt, considered by many the greatest in history. Eaton couldn't answer why the county is such a hotbed for arm wrestling, but certainly credits Larratt with being a catalyst. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Craig Foster.
Thank you to Craig Foster of CJPE for that story. Up next, we have the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Jeff Gard, with a story about the Halliburton-Kawartha-Pine Ridge District Health Unit's push to ensure all student vaccinations are up to date in the region.
The Halliburton-Kawartha-Pine Ridge District Health Unit is continuing its efforts to ensure all elementary and high school students have their current immunizations, and now suggesting all individuals make sure their measles vaccinations are up to date as well, as March break approaches. The health unit said Tuesday there are four active cases of measles in Ontario, with three reports of cases in two other provinces as well. I spoke with Marianne Rock, the HKPR Health Unit's Manager of Communicable Diseases and Prevention Control.
So this is really a situation where we're seeing measles, obviously internationally, but we're also seeing them in Ontario, right? We're seeing them in the Greater Toronto Area, and at some point, hopefully not soon or hopefully not at all, measles might make its way to the HKPR area. And so it's just another call to arms, you know, to make sure everyone checks their own as an adult, their vaccination status for measles as well as children. And we know March break is just next week, and there's going to be lots of people traveling, I imagine. And so we know that, you know, you visit different areas of the world, they have different recommendations around vaccines, and people have, you know, may not be vaccinated for measles. So we want to make sure that people take a very cautious approach and make sure they do what they can to make sure they're protected. So it sort of goes hand in hand with the ISPA or the enforcement we're doing. You know, it's just another reminder of the importance of vaccine. And we know that with COVID-19, a lot of people didn't have access to vaccinations because doctor's offices were closed and such. And so, it's just another reminder of the importance of how important vaccines are to keep everyone healthy.
Measles is a highly contagious virus spread through coughing and sneezing that can live up to 2 hours in the air. Symptoms of measles include fever, a red blotchy rash, red watery eyes, and white spots in the mouth. Measles is prevented by vaccination. And Ontario's routine immunization schedule includes two doses of the highly effective measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines for children before the ages of 7 years old. Rock said infants should receive their first dose at 12 months before the second dose between the ages of 4 and 6 years old.
Generally speaking, that's all you need when you're you need those two doses. But we know that vaccine eligibility and research has changed over the years. And so we know that there's some adults particularly those born before 1970 that may not have those two doses. And so it's really important that they talk to the doctor about making sure they're up to date. Generally speaking, an adult born after 1970 should have two documented doses of measles. But again, there's all these different criteria. There's high risk criteria. Healthcare workers are a different situation. And again, want to make sure that those people are definitely protected because they're the ones caring for those who may have measles and other people who are sick.
The health unit mailed first notices Monday to parents and guardians of students in junior and senior kindergarten, grade 2 and grades 4 to 8, whose children are overdue for required immunizations under the Immunization of School Pupils Act or do not have a valid exemption on record. Back in the fall, the health unit focused its attention getting students in grades 3 and 9 to 12 up to date.
We were able to basically get everyone back to school pretty much, and through vaccination or exemption, depending on what the parent decided at the time. And so we're hopeful that that will occur again this next round. We just sent out about 3,600 first notices to our JK to grade 8s, excluding the grade 3s yesterday. And so we're hoping that we'll get a good response before we have to enforce suspensions for those grades in May.
Suspension orders will be sent on April 29th, with implementation of suspensions beginning May 13th, though Rock said the hope is it doesn't get to that point.
We are wanting to make sure that students stay in school. And so, you know, we invite parents to give us a call as soon as they get that first notice and act when they get that first notice, whether that's be through talking to their doctor, getting a vaccine through their doctor, or calling us if they don't have one. And so that way they won't even get a suspension order for their child.
Rock said there's two types of exemptions that parents and guardians can get for students.
One of them is a medical exemption. So that is through usually a doctor or a nurse practitioner. And that's where a child can't receive a vaccine for various medical reasons. They may have an allergy to the vaccine or something like that, or a component in it, or some other reason. And the other type of exemption is a statement of conscience. So that's where a parent can exercise their right based on their beliefs to exempt their child from vaccines. And so that requires a parent to fill out. Both exemptions require a parent to fill out a form. And in the philosophical exemption, they also have to get that form notarized, and then they have to view a vaccine education session, which is something that we do virtually. We send out the link to the parent, and then we our nurses chat with them about it, make sure they've watched the video, and then that makes their child exempt from vaccines. Okay.
Rock noted that the health unit doesn't automatically receive updates from doctor's offices, so in most cases, it's up to parents and guardians to report vaccinations to the health unit. Some might not be aware that the health unit doesn't have the information on file.
The grades that we are enforcing the legislation right now with, a lot of the younger kids, especially in JK to grade 2, we just don't have a record on file. And so it's really important that when those parents get those notices, that they give us the update. And there's different ways that they can do that. And it's all written in the notice that they receive in through the school.
For more information or to schedule a vaccination appointment for those without a family doctor, check out hkpr.on.ca. Reporting for CFWN, Northumberland 89.7 FM, I'm Jeff Gard.
Thank you to Jeff Gard from CFWN Coburg for that story. Coming up next, the Environment Canada Weather Report. Thursday, March 14th, we see a mix of sun and cloud with a high of 11 degrees Celsius. Overnight, we are going to see a low of 4 and a chance of precipitation. Friday, March 15th, a beautiful sunny 13 degree day here in the city of Kingston. But overnight, we are going to see temperatures drop down to 2 degrees with a 40% chance of rain showers or flurries. Saturday, March 16th, cloudy, 7 degrees, dropping down to 2 degrees overnight with a chance of rain. Sunday, March 17th, we're going to see a 60% chance of showers, 6 degrees as the high, with an overnight low of negative 6 degrees with that persistent chance of flurries or rain showers. Cold start to next week, as both Monday, March 18th and Tuesday, March 19th are going to see a daytime high of 1 degree with a 30% chance of precipitation on the Tuesday. This concludes your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. This is Jesse Bell signing it off and throwing it over to the excellent team at CFRC for your community concert and events calendar.
Have an event you'd like covered on our website or news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. On March 14th, Art Hive will be held at Agnes Etherington Arts Center from 4 to 6 p.m. Art Hive is a chance for aspiring artists to explore the creative process through experimentation and play. Materials are provided and no prior art experience is necessary to participate. To register for free, visit agnes.queensu.ca. On Friday, March 15th, wrap up the week on a green note with Get Growing at the Rocking Horse from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. From potted plants to seed planting, discover the joys of nurturing nature. Register and pay the $5 admission fee at therockinghorse.ca. On March 16th, there will be a mixed martial arts competition at the Leon Center from 6 to 9 p.m. The card is expected to feature up to 14 bouts, including a title fight under the BTC Fight Promotions banner. Tickets vary in price and can be purchased at ticketmaster.ca. Also on March 16th, the Queen's Observatory will be hosting an open house at Ellis Hall from 7:30 to 10 p.m. This event will include a presentation from featured speaker Parisa Nazari, Queen's Astronomy and Astrophysics PhD student, who will discuss dust in the interstellar medium and the inefficiency of star formation. The presentation will be followed by a tour of the observatory's facilities. Don't miss the chance to attend this entirely free event that is open to all ages. No need to register. And lastly, on March 17th, City Hall will be lit up green for Irish Heritage Day. St. Patrick's Day is celebrated annually on March 17th, the anniversary of his death in the 5th century. Head over any time to view the green lights as they will be displayed all day. Moving into the concerts for the week, on March 14th, The Music Movement, a student-led fundraiser concert featuring over 30 incredibly talented musicians from Queen's University, will take place at Kingston Grand Theatre at 7 p.m. This event is more than just music. The Music Movement will support the Women's Center in the Kilimanjaro region of Tanzania. This center is a beacon of hope, providing crucial healthcare services to thousands of individuals and advocating tirelessly for female reproductive rights. To purchase tickets for $25.50, visit kingstongrand.ca, and to make an additional donation, visit givetoqueens.ca. On March 15th, there will be a free open mic night at Spearhead Brewery from 7 to 10 p.m. Calling all rock and reggae fans, on March 16th, Big Sugar will be performing their signature blend of Jamaican rhythms, bluesy tones, and heavy rock at Kingston Grand Theatre from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Tickets vary in price and can be purchased at kingstongrand.ca. And lastly, on March 17th, the Mahones will be performing at the Broom Factories from 7:30 to 10 p.m. for a St. Patrick's Day celebration. Doors open at 7 p.m. Tickets are $30 and can be purchased at ticketscene.ca. Also on the 17th, celebrate St. Patrick's Day at the Royal Tavern with live music starting at 12 p.m. The Stand Up Doubles, Sitting Ducks, Paula Woodband, Richard Cranium, and Jeff Jen will be taking the stage. Admission is free. This has been Danielle with your concert and events calendar, wishing you all a great week.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong. Your true, true friend loves you just
as you are. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.